First, I just have so much respect for Harbs. Our stories will forever be, you know, interwoven. This rivalry that we've been fortunate and honored enough to be a part of, I just got so much respect for him and how he's gone about his business. We've certainly had some legendary battles over the years. You know, in terms of him being let go, unfortunately, I just think it's a component of today's sport culture. You know, there have been many examples of that. It's unfortunate, but I'm sure that he is going to move on. And if he chooses to coach again, I'm sure he will. And I'm sure he'll be very successful at doing so. But more than anything, I just think it's, you know, a larger example of today's sport culture in terms of not a lot of patience in the entertainment component of what it is that we do. There's just not a lot of longevity. You know, I'm sure we all would like to be Don Shula and Tom Landry, but I think those days are gone.
Okay.
For everybody except me, Mike Tomlin.
Yeah, that's Mike Tomlin on Rich Eisen's show. The first time he's talked about John Harbaugh. Honestly, the best place for him to talk about Harbaugh, because it would have elicited a crap answer from him if he did it with Steelers reporters at his press conference. And no offense to any of the people that do that job. In fact, like, this is the last day I'd want to criticize those people with what's happening at the Post-Gazette. But we know that Mike gives better answers to people he likes and to people he's more comfortable with. And Rich Eisen is in that club. We're going to hear later some answers that Mike gave about DK Metcalf and even some of the more off the beaten path things that he got asked, like why he did that beat the chest kiss celebration after the game. And he gave solid, transparent, descriptive, long answers on all of these things.
Yes, because he likes national media and does not like local media. It's very simple.
Tomlin's reaction to the Harbaugh thing, I got to be real, I did not expect that he would blame this on the impatience of the NFL fan and NFL ownership in today's world. Like, I didn't think that that's the route he would take this in, especially when talking about a guy who got 18 years on the job. If Eisen asked Mike about Stefanski in Cleveland, I think that answer that he gave would have been wholly appropriate, because we know the behavior of the Browns owner is pretty flippant. He's made a lot of bad decisions. He's made a lot of knee-jerk decisions. This is almost 20 years. And it really opens up, I think, a window into Mike. It makes you think that if for some reason Art grew a pair and said, lack of playoff success, not good enough, I'm going to fire this guy, that Mike would feel like, you know, Art, like, had this character transformation and turned into somebody who only cared about what have you done for me lately. That he would have gotten a raw deal after 19 years, because he can't be, who are the two coaches he mentioned there again?
Don Shula and Landry.
Yeah. He picked the two guys that had the longest. He knew that. He knew that those are the two longest tenured coaches in NFL history. He could have easily said something like 18 years in pro sports is an eternity. He had a great run there. He'll do great someplace else. But blaming it on sports culture?
That's laughable to me.
A
sports culture, I will say, he openly admits is what it is and seems to be... Like, he routinely says in a not negative context that we're in the entertainment business when, like, people talk about getting booed or whatever. So, in that sense, he always has struck me as somebody who gets it and understands that booing is part of it. If you're putting out an entertainment product people don't like, they will boo. But now the entertainment part of this, there's some noble higher calling where you're supposed to be appointed, like, coach for life. Buddy, you are coaching football. You are not, like, you're not a research scientist. You're not anything else. He laments it, too. You're bringing up very good points all around here. He is lamenting something that doesn't even apply to him. That's the craziest part.
No, if he wanted...
He exists on a completely separate utopian island where he gets to do whatever he wants.
And so did Harbaugh. And it sounds like there could have been some things Harbaugh might have been able to do to save his job there and just decided, nah, I don't really want to do that. I think I'll just see what else is out there. And if I can't find what I want, you guys can pay me the $17.5 million that's guaranteed. And I'll go smile and talk on TV for a year if I have to do that, if push comes to shove. Harbaugh and Tomlin worked for the two NFL organizations currently that are avatars for the opposite of what he's talking about.
Correct.
This is not Brian Flores getting fired in Miami after 9-8. It's not Tomlin's buddy, Raheem Morris, winning four in a row, going 8-9, tying for the division lead and getting fired after
Jim
only
Caldwell.
2 years.
It's not Marty Schottenheimer. You know what Mike's avoiding saying in that, by the way? He's avoiding any kind of statement that would suggest that maybe it was Lamar Jackson who really wanted John Harbaugh to go. Mr. Jackson.
Well, wait a minute. You actually might have thought, you might have caused a light bulb to go on in my head here. Do you think it's possible when he talks about sports culture, he's referring to players having more power over coaches?
No, I think he's talking about instant gratification culture from owners.
That's how I interpreted those comments too. But
he gives his players tons of power and tons of agency.
I know, but couldn't you? I would think Tomlin would find it ridiculous if a coach got fired because he just had a disagreement with a player. Or do you think that he would find that wholly appropriate if they decided we're going to pick Lamar over John Harbaugh?
I think he doesn't want to be seen as an NFL head coach criticizing a guy like Lamar or implying or implicating Lamar and just
being the reason why he got fired.
I think if anything, that's like a player friendly approach to kind of push it off on this nebulous idea of this is the culture we live in. Can you believe it? A guy only gets 18 years on the job. His coaching tenure with Baltimore was old enough to buy cigarettes. No, I think you have to be 21 to buy cigs now.
Is that true, Jack? Are you old enough to buy cigarettes, my friend?
Some places you got
to be. No, you got to be 21.
Yeah, man. I think they jacked
when
up the
When did that
age.
Change?
Pretty recently.
I am today years old learning that if you're 18.
You can still play the lottery at 18.
Can you buy Zyn? Is Zyn off limits?
It's the same thing. It's all like nicotine.
21, man.
When, Donnie, were you allowed to buy Zyn at 18? Have you always been of the belief that you needed to turn 21 to buy a cigarette? Did that apply to you too?
I mean, I was never buying them. I can't think of when that age changed over.
It happened in the last like 2 or 3 years.
Does AI know? Can we ask AI to get us an answer on this?
I'm just going to say, when did the legal age?
And you're searching Google, but Google is going to AI it for you anyways, which you hate.
Well, yeah, and Google's also responsible.
Is this a state thing or is this a national law?
Federal minimum age to buy tobacco, including cigs, was raised to 21 on December 20th, 2019. Trump signed legislation into law as part of a larger spending bill.
Completely forgot that. I guess it didn't apply to me, so I didn't
No
care.
Exceptions, even for military personnel. So can you imagine somebody lobbying on behalf of the U.S. military saying, like, listen, we got some 19-year-olds in here and they need their dip. They need their cigs.
I'm going to no comment that one.
I'm just imagining like the idea that they would like have a military exceptional, you know, carve out there, that it would even be like something that would be discussed.
I'm also going to take Tomlin's comments on Harbaugh to infer this about him. I think it also shows that he probably inside, behind closed doors, was incensed by the fire Tomlin chance. He's bemoaning the sports culture with Harbaugh. Now, he beats Harbaugh. You could easily argue that Harbaugh's been a superior coach in terms of resume of the coach in the last 5 to 10 years. You can.
I don't think you really need to try to argue that. If you go and start from Tomlin's Super Bowl appearance in 2010, the 2010 season, just go 15 years or whatever that is, technically 16, John Harbaugh's been better because he's won a Super Bowl, and I believe it would be he's won how many more playoff games?
He's got 13 playoff wins and Mike has 8.
No, but I'm saying like since that last Super Bowl appearance from Mike, I'm pretty sure John has to have more playoff victories.
All right, so he won.
Mike would have won 4 or 3 of his playoff games in 2008. He would have won another 2 in 2010, so that's all but 3 of his victories.
Well, they won what, 3 playoff games with Lamar?
Yeah, but they also won 4 with Flacco in 2012. That's 7 right there by itself.
And they won playoff games after that, including a playoff game here.
8. 9.
Yep.
So John's won a lot more, like the last decade and a half. So for both guys, the majority of their careers with their respective teams, John's been better.
Rich Eisen asked Mike a follow-up question about his longevity. Here's what it sounded like.
Your longevity as you go into this game.
All right, that might actually is a very short question. But so that's the way the question started. Do you think Tomlin's going to give him a good answer on this?
Yes.
So now he follows it up and says, well, almost do you think about your own coaching mortality after watching Harbaugh get fired? You're guessing he does give a good answer?
Yeah, I think he will.
Okay.
On Monday night.
I don't. First of all, I'm certainly really appreciative of the work environment that I've been in for 19 years and the stability and the steadiness of our ownership. But man, I'm tunnel visioned as a leader, man. I'm called upon to serve these guys, and you know, NFL playing careers are very short. And so I certainly can't seek comfort in the longevity of my career. I work with guys who have very short careers, and I tend to try to always have and mirror that urgency. I think it's disrespectful not to have that level of urgency when I lead them. Very rarely do I delve into big picture perspectives or appreciate the longevity component of what I've been able to do. There's just so many things that are waiting for me today, this week, that demand my attention.
All right. He gave him a word salad. I need to think about the game and not think about the meaning of my career, or the state of my career, what could possibly be done.
Some light bulb just went off for me when you just think of how proud Mike is of like his lengthy coaching tenure and how much he believes good coaches deserve like a pretty long amount of rope to like prove that they're maybe not the guy for the job anymore. The biggest problem for him that he has, and it's really something that's, again, originates with Art Rooney, is just that throughout this whole time, once LeBeau and everybody else left, he's just never really, I feel like, been told seriously behind closed doors, you need to change the way you do things.
It's interesting to hear him talk about how much urgency he proclaims to have over, like, we have to win. And they make moves to win. Like, win right now. They brought in a 42-year-old quarterback. They drafted a running back in the first round. Like, it does manifest in things like that. But to what you just said, there never seems to be any urgency in terms of
I'm hiring new coordinators.
Yes,
I'm gonna strip myself of play calling duties. None of that. Ever. Ever.
It's personnel urgency. It's changing out players radically. That urgency exists. But
they're all
staff,
like asked to fit into the Mike rubric or paradigm of how you're gonna play and how the team's gonna be. And if you're a coach on his staff, if you're a defensive coach, you take a job as a coordinator knowing you don't get to call the plays. You don't get to really make the game plan.
But
it's him.
Yes, if you're a defensive coordinator, the positive, though, is that you know whatever you sign that contract for, 2 or 3 years, you're going to coach for 2 or 3 years. You're not going to get blown out after 1 year.
That's an art thing, though. Because even I think if Mike wanted to blow out a coach after 1 year and say, this guy's terrible, I'm sorry I hired him, I think Art would be like, sorry, buddy, you could demote him. But, you know, he's still on the staff and he still has to do something.
Fan Hotline's presented by Sullivan Super Service, Pittsburgh's trusted plumbing and HVAC provider for over 50 years. Let's talk to NFL on CBS insider, reporter, sideline reporter, Aditi Kinkabwala. She's brought to you by Sir Grout Pittsburgh, your local grout cleaning expert, and Tap Brick Oven and Poorhouse in Greensburg. Aditi, did you see this John Harbaugh thing coming?
I didn't. And you know what's so funny? I was talking to one of his longtime players yesterday. And he was like, yeah, I'm not totally surprised because there was a lot of noise about it. And I was like, yeah, well, there's a lot of noise about a lot of things. And that doesn't necessarily mean that it's true. But this is a decision that was made by ownership and ownership alone. So when, you know, when I'm thinking about a move being made, I'm thinking about the GM. I'm thinking about all sorts of factors that go into something like that, but that's not how this was decided. Mm. So that's that. I'm stunned, but clearly he's the hottest candidate on the market right now. He will have a job. He will probably have his choice of jobs. He may be in a position where he gets to handpick his general manager as well. So he's going to be okay. I think what's interesting for the Steelers is that there are certainly some candidates that in my interactions with them, I would feel very, very strongly about as being a good successor, being set up to succeed. And there are some names I've seen that I've just really sort of thought Not so sure that's a great idea right there.
Aditi, for Steelers fans, who would be the name that you would say if this person took over the Ravens, it would be very bad because they would make the Ravens very good? And who's somebody that you think would be somebody that would struggle maybe to have the kind of success Harbaugh did?
Okay, I'm not going to answer the latter question because if that person gets the job, I'll be dealing with that person.
Fair enough.
Next year.
I wanted to hear the first part more than the second part because I had a feeling what you were going to say.
I'm a huge fan of Jesse Minter's. Jesse Minter, of course, is the Chargers defensive coordinator. In a lot of ways, when you look at Jesse Minter, you can kind of see Mike McDonald redux. And what I mean by that is just like Mike McDonald, he's coached for both Jim and John, coached with both of them. He's coached at Michigan. He's coached in Baltimore. He obviously is tremendous in LA. I can tell you Derwin James and Khalil Mack, who are two of my most favorite superstars ever because of who they are, the way they play, love him unabashedly, feel so strongly about the teacher he is, how detailed he is, how flexible he is willing to be, how innovative he is. And Jesse's young. I don't even know if he's 40. He's a second generation coach, but he's got an ability to not only lead a room and have authority, but also relate to a younger generation of player, which also, by the way, has been a major conversation point with a lot of coaches and players over the last 24 hours for me, because clearly John Harbaugh is old school. He is old school in the Sean Payton way, and not every player is game for that or up for that. Another name that I love, I don't see him going there, but I'm still really, really bullish on Brian Flores, and I believe it, I buy it, when Brian Flores has told us, our crew, told me repeatedly over the last few years how different he is, how much he's learned, how humbled he's been, how much better he thinks he can lead. We already know that he's as detailed of a teacher as there are out there. We know how brilliant of a defensive mind he is. That's never been in question. But even just last week in talking to Harrison Smith and Andrew Van Ginkle was drafted by him in Miami. And he said he is so much better at relating to people and players and making an effort. And so I think he's definitely set up to succeed. I don't know that he's necessarily the most likely candidate there. I don't know what the odds are. You guys would know better than I am right now, but I think both of those could cause a lot of fits for the Steelers, both of those men.
Aditi, we had Florio on before you, and okay. Mike said minutes before the game Sunday night that there was a scenario in which Mike wouldn't be back as head coach in 2026, and he brought up the TV thing. So I asked him to follow up on that when he was on with us, and I'm going to play for you what he said.
Okay. I believe Mike Tomlin's got an opportunity in TV in his back pocket, and he's got to decide when the season's over whether or not he's going to take advantage of it. That's what I believe, based upon everything I've seen, heard, etc. I think he's got something, and it's just up to him at the right time, walking away from the Steelers and walking through that.
Aditi, you've come on with us several times and said you don't see Tomlin in TV. Do you still feel that way?
No. I'm sorry. In fact, I know that there have been conversations involving him with very, very high level TV executives. I'm not saying that that was ever anything exploratory on his end. There is a ton of interest in him for sure in television. But did you see him on the Rich Eisen show today?
Yes, we've talked about some of
and
those
did you
comments.
See he completely poo-pooed that and said that the adrenaline of the competition still really fuels him. And let me tell you, that's not – look at Matt Ryan. Matt Ryan really enjoyed calling games, and he enjoyed a year at the NFL today. But he needs that sense of team back. And so he's likely leaving as one of my teammates at CBS and going to be the president of the Atlanta Falcons. And I don't see any of Mike Tomlin's competitiveness or desire or juice for that Sunday, or be it Monday or Thursday or Friday or Saturday at this point. I don't see any of that ebbing at this point.
Aditi, how many times did you see the Texans this year?
I only had them once this year. And in fact, they were pretty close to bottom at that point. I texted Tony that earlier. I had them week three against the Jaguars. It was a game that set offensive football back about 100 years. It was terrible. But, you know, at that time, it was a new offensive coordinator, still sort of finding his footing. He'd never been a play caller. It was DeMeco Ryans being involved with the offense for the first time. C.J. Stroud was figuring out having to have his head coach involved with the offense. In fact, I remember C.J. saying he'd never played for a defensive-minded head coach. They were still kind of figuring some things out, but this is what the arc of a season is. I mean, a month ago, we were writing the Steelers off, and here they are, the division champs. However you think they came by it, they are indeed the division champ. So that defense, Chris, you know, I said this to my husband. He didn't really want to listen to me, but that defense will get pressure on Aaron Rodgers. The Steelers line has been playing really well, and I don't know that that's been as big of a story as it should be. But despite that, I fully expect the Texans to be able to get pressure on Rodgers that the Ravens absolutely couldn't. Will Anderson, I'll tell you this, Will Anderson and Danielle Hunter are both first-team All-Pros on my ballot. I put both of their names in there.
You have a ballot?
I do have a ballot.
Are you at liberty to tell us any more picks? I'm curious if Cam Hayward's name popped up on that ballot.
I mean, I'm at liberty. I could. I don't actually have my ballot in front of me. He is not one of my two first team defensive tackles. But
Chris Jones.
I do have to honestly. Chris Jones was not first team. No.
I guess I'm going reputationally. Now I'd have to really think about this one.
And that's not it. And, you know, it's funny. It's like when you do those votes, I got a lot of heat for this last year, too, but I talk to a lot of people. So, of course, I look at stats. Of course, I consider who are you playing with or alongside or what did your offense do? You know, like as tremendous of a year as Myles Garrett had in my mind, I think he gets bonus points for the fact that his offense was so putrid. I mean, that defense is on the field constantly, and to constantly bring it when you are losing and your offense can never bail you out and can never put together a long drive. That's a for example. So, and then it's not only about production. You know, last year, Trey Hendrickson had a ton of numbers, but by the same token, you don't feel Trey Hendrickson on the field the way you did other pass rushers last year, the way that you felt Garrett or even TJ Watt or Nick Benito. And so I had that conversation this year with a lot of coaches about Justin Jefferson. Not that he can be a first team all pro considering the production, but if you watch Vikings tape, he is constantly winning. He is constantly open. There were four plays in that Christmas Day game that should have gone for touchdowns, where Max Brosmer couldn't even get him the ball. So Max then you sit Brosmer. Here and you say, well, look, if I'm starting a team right now, my wide receiver one is either Justin Jefferson or Ja'Marr Chase. So what's the All-Pro award? Is it only on production or is it who is really
when
the
is
best
that going to get announced?
Position?
When is that going to come out, the results of that?
The annual awards won't come out until NFL honors.
Yeah, but the All-Pro teams. Hey. Do we know?
Yeah. Can we discuss this? Like, Mosey, you have two kids. My son, from the minute he was a year old, like, knew not to interrupt me when I was working. And my daughter, who is the second one, like, she just thinks she's the most important thing
Ace
in the world.
Younger one, and he just yells at me, like, open, like, when he, like, in terms of what you're talking about
very
interrupting.
Very clearly.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, Ace just yells at both of us.
I'm having a conversation, and she's like, can I have more carrots? Can you wait 30 seconds to
Ace won't even do that. He'll go, Dad, Apple. By the way, Aditi, this is a very quick hit question. Obviously, you don't have an MVP vote, correct?
Of course I do, yeah.
You do? Oh, crap, then I can't really ask this because the way you described like the Jefferson and Chase stuff, I'm sorry, I don't mean to plead ignorance there that you would have had or not had one, But I think the May Stafford debate is a fascinating one when you talk about MVP too. For that reason.
So, and this is another one where, and again, this is not, I think the best at anything, whether you're the best scientist or the best reporter, you're trying to do as much research as possible. And research involves as many sources as you can get to. And so I've certainly, at the end of the day, no one's going to convince me of a vote, but I'm going to poll people. I'm going to have conversations with people. And I was on the field in Minnesota on Sunday having this conversation with several. I was in a group of three offensive coaches, one who had in fact coached Stafford, talking about the May versus Stafford comparison. And, you know, Stafford plays in a tougher division. Sure, but the two of them have six common opponents. And against those six common opponents, Drake is 6-0 and Stafford is 4-2. Drake actually won his division. Stafford didn't. Stafford has the best supporting cast in football, according to like Pro Football Focus. What was May playing with? And it's funny because these Vikings coaches that I was talking to were adamant that it has to be Stafford. And they said, what you're telling me is more a lifetime achievement award than
in season.
This year yeah. alone, this was the most valuable player yeah. in the National Football League. And I talked to a coach in the AFC East, not a Patriots coach, but another AFC East coach. And he was like, it's got to be May. And he said, hands down, what he has done to elevate that team, to elevate the guys around him, to get that team playing the way that they have. And I go back to, I had the Patriots week one, and I remember talking to someone in the front office who was like, okay, culturally, sure, we're different, but we still don't have players.
God, that's when they lost to the Raiders.
I mean, I think this blows them away.
Oh, my God. They lost yeah. to the Raiders at home in the rain.
You have such a good memory. Yep. That was week one. And it was like, okay, they've got work to do.
Aditi, sorry to belabor this, but do we know how many coaches, like how many coaches do you vote for Coach of the Year? Is it two? Is it three?
Five.
Is it five? Do you expect Tomlin to get Coach of the Year votes?
My understanding is that there are 50 voters. So amongst 50, maybe, he is not in my top five. And I had six I felt really strongly about.
Pony just nodded and approvingly when you said that. He went, that's right.
Well, that's because Crowley came on the air yesterday and said he gives him an A for this season, and I just thought that was ridiculous. Yeah, they won the division, but they lost seven games. They needed a missed field goal to get in. Yeah, the Broncos win the conference. You had Liam Cohen go from 13 losses to 13 wins. You had the job that who else are we thinking of yesterday for that award?
Shanahan.
Chris? Shanahan did.
I'll tell you that I think the job that
Vrabel?
Kyle Shanahan did, I mean, he lost his quarterback for so much of the year. He lost his two defensive players. He didn't have George Kittle. That division is an absolute beast. The way that he stayed steady and the job that he did, Vrabel completely turning over culture that quickly. Let me cut this for you. I think Liam Cohen, absolutely. Ben Johnson, Mike McDonald being smart enough to know that he needs to move on from his offensive coordinator. Mike McDonald pushing for Sam Darnold, the way that that defense plays, that's also tremendous. Sean Payton was on my ballot last year. He's the one that I struggled with that was not in my top five. I thought Sean Payton's job is unbelievable.
Yeah.
I mean,
look at the record in one score games.
He completely turned over that roster to get his guys. And you look at what he did with Russ, which is a conversation that I have a lot when we talk about the Browns or we talk about Tua Tagovailoa. Like sometimes you just got to eat it and move forward. And Sean Payton did it.
Yeah. He sure did.
You know, Dolphin fans right now are saying, well, the cap hit, and well, this much money, and well, okay, well, that's what the Broncos were facing. That's what Sean Payton was facing, and look at where he is.
Aditi, enjoy the game Monday night. I'm not sure if you'll be there in person, but maybe you will be as a family member to a season ticket holder.
Does that not count? We have a joint bank account. Aren't those my season tickets too?
I know, but I didn't know if your like journalistic integrity frowned upon me calling you a season ticket holder. That's why I tried to word it that way.
You know what? I'm actually, CBS is sending me to Chargers Patriots.
Oh, cool.
And my son and my husband will indeed be at that Monday night game. So we will see what sort of, I'm not a great fan, guys. Like, if I'm not on the field, I don't even, like, even the Chargers-Patriots assignment, I'll be on the field pregame, I'll be on the field postgame, but I won't be on the field during the game because, of course, it's an NBC game. And I'm kind of like, yeah.
So you're a snob about it. I get it.
A little different when you're in the middle of the action and then you're suddenly not.
Thanks, Aditi. We'll talk next week. It's time for the Donnie Football Debrief, our football guy's biggest football topic of the day. Want to remind you that vacations begin here at the Pittsburgh Travel Showcase presented by AAA Travel, January 23rd through 25th at the David Lawrence Convention Center. There's exclusive discounts and convenient one-stop shopping. Dream it, plan it, book it. Experience. Tickets and details at PittsburghTravelShowcase.com, where your vacation is waiting for you. Hello, Don.
The debrief, January 7, 2026. I thought this was a neat stat for some of the playoff games this weekend. It pertains to the one that will be played in Pittsburgh on Monday. Matt Couture had this on Twitter.
Can I kind of guess what it's about? Is it related to dome teams?
Yes, it is.
Let's hear it.
In the last decade, teams that play indoors are 1-14 straight up on the road in the playoffs when the temp is below 40.
So when does this go back to? 2015 season or 16?
Well, I guess it would be the 15 season.
Yeah, because he's not counting this
January
one.
January of 16.
Yeah.
Who's the one team that
won? That's what I'm
trying
going
to think
through
that.
My brain right now to figure out. So your dome teams are Lions,
Rams, Chargers.
Well, are they? Not to get too pedantic here, but do they?
Well, the Texans aren't a dome team because that's a retractable roof.
The Chargers, Rams, and Texans all do
all
count, even though.
Well, the Texans is a genuine retractable. The other one is technically an open.
It's open air.
Yes.
But the tweet, because Covers picked this up.
Uh huh.
And the tweet, it has, you know, the picture they use is Justin Herbert.
Right.
So they're clearly talking about the Chargers because they play at Gillette on Sunday night.
Yep. And so one of these teams went into cold weather and won a game in the last 10 years outdoors. Texans have never won a road playoff game, so you can cross them out right off the bat.
I don't think it's the Chargers.
Going back to 2015. No, it's not the Chargers.
Yeah, plus they played outside the last time they won a playoff
Correct.
Game, I think.
Yep. Vikings playoff wins. They went to New Orleans and won.
But that wasn't outside.
Correct. Yeah. And it wasn't in cold weather. Saints are a dome team.
Oh, man. Would this have counted if the Rams had finished the job against the Eagles a couple years ago?
Yeah, that was under 40 degrees, I'm pretty sure.
I thought there was, like, snow on the ground.
Yeah. It was. Especially in the second half of that game, it was snowing like crazy. Lions, no, right?
Donnie, I'm just going to take a wild guess. For some reason, I just think it's the Arizona Cardinals.
But the Cardinals haven't won a playoff game since 2015, so that right away would eliminate them. Their one playoff win in 2015 was that game against Green Bay, right?
Was it Indy then?
That was in Arizona. That's the game where they beat the Packers and then went to Carolina the next week and got killed.
Did Indy beat somebody?
I mean, I'm with you guys. I don't know what the answer is.
Man, this is just bug. It's like kind of a... It's nagging at me.
Guess what? We're going to cheat.
Oh, yeah.
I hate cheating, but I'm going to cheat.
Ask
here.
AI who did it.
No, we're not going to ask AI.
They'll probably tell you it's the Winnipeg Blue Bombers.
I like when Kabali posted this. Like the next 30 Super Bowl champions is predicted by AI.
Isn't one of them like a KFC logo?
One of them was.
Yeah.
He's like
Taco Bell wins a Super Bowl.
I think he was like, the Los Angeles Dodgers are predicted to win a. No, that was baseball. It was the next 30 World Series champions, and he said the Cincinnati Bengals are predicted to win a World Series before the Pirates
could
next
happen.
World Series.
Yeah, and then there was like a Japanese team that won 5 years in a row.
All right, so the Falcons have been a road playoff team the entire time. They won a divisional game on the road at the Rams. I remember that. I don't think when they lost 28-3, their games were at home, so it's not them. Who the frig is it? Are the Cowboys a dome team?
Yeah, that's a dome.
I think you
Donnie?
Would, I think, yeah, you would count that. I mean, they're counting yeah, the Texans. No. They're counting both L.A. teams.
Jerry World is a dome.
Yeah, and it's not as if those two stadiums are the old
they didn't win
dome.
Any. They didn't win any road playoff games.
Jerry World is a dome. How could they hang that gigantic screen from the ceiling?
Very well said, Malzi.
Eloquence is one of my strong suits. This is driving me crazy.
When the Lions went to the NFC Championship game, they beat the Rams because it was the Stafford homecoming, and then they beat Baker the next week. Those are both in Detroit, so it's not them.
And that Niner, and they lost the Niners game, so it doesn't even matter.
Yeah, and then they lost to Washington in last year's playoffs. Colts. You said you guys think it's the Colts.
That's the only one I can keep coming up with here. Like, who could they have randomly beaten in the playoffs? When did Luck retire? 2019?
They beat the
going into 19.
They beat the Texans, but that's that would never another be. Dome. Another no, dome
is,
team.
This is driving me pretty nuts.
Raiders are a dome team now, but we know
they haven't won a playoff game in forever.
Correct.
What about anybody going to like Cincinnati before they actually won with Burrow?
I don't think so.
This is like a little research project that this is stumping me, man.
I'm looking at the Rams right now. Nope.
This is really stumping me. Why does my brain tell me it should be the
Wait
Saints?
Wait a minute. What was the temperature you said?
40 or below. Below 40.
I found
I
it.
Say.
Below 40. I found the game. It's such a crappy technicality.
Come on.
In 2020, the Rams went to Seattle wild card weekend.
In one.
That's the game when Goff got benched and they played.
Isn't it like John Wolford?
Yeah.
Yeah, big John Wolford.
And
what was it, 39 degrees?
Wolford got hurt in the game and Goff went in.
Could you imagine saying that now?
Yeah, Wolford was the starter,
that
got injured, and Goff
was
came
the
in.
Backup.
I remember thinking Wolford was kind of cooking for them.
Rams 30, Seahawks and Russell Wilson 20. Game time temperature 39 degrees at kickoff.
There it is. Guys, let's go win. Let's beat John Wolford.
I didn't even think about that game because I don't think if Seattle is a cold weather
it gets pretty,
city.
It does. It gets cold.
I know it rains.
It like never gets cold enough to snow there. That's the thing. Most people there don't have air conditioners. Did you know that? Because in the summer, it actually does not get hot enough. They have heat waves now, it seems like. But like generally speaking, it stays low 80s and pleasant.
So that's the only one.
Yeah.
And it's supposed to be what, in the low 30s for Monday night's game?
Yes.
My gut take on that is I just don't look at the Texans the same way I do the Dolphins. Dolphins
not
come up here on a Monday night.
Dolphins are a finesse team. Texans are not a finesse team. I also think it's stylistically. Like, what kind of a team are you?
The defense Texans travels
the
that
Texans
thing.
Want to bludgeon you. And they also play in. Here's the other thing. Now, I guess that applies to Miami actually even more. They have three cold weather like cities that they have to go to. I was going to say, though, the Texans play Dome Stadium. Tennessee can kind of be whatever. It's more warm than not. It'll
Is
get
it?
A little it'll get chillier. I mean, my sister-in-law lives in Nashville, and she said, like, while it was snowing up here for Christmas, she's like, you know, she's up here visiting. She's like, it's going to be 70 in Nashville tomorrow. I just don't think of the Texans that way, I guess. I think of two teams that way that have trouble playing in cold weather, Tampa Bay and Miami. But Tampa's even, like, won games historically.
Well, yeah, they won the NFC Championship
in
Philly.
Philly
with Rondé Barber.
And Sean, not Sean King, I'm sorry.
Brad Johnson.
Brad Johnson, thank you. Donnie, what receiver for the Bucs looked like he caught a pass in their 11-8 NFC title game loss against the greatest show on turf, Rams, but it was ruled not a catch? Very pivotal play in the game. Probably
Bucs receiver.
Yeah, Bucs receiver. Kind of a man with two, definitely a man with
this
two first names.
This is a toughie for him.
Okay,
it's a big-time toughie. It's a big time topic.
I'll give
here.
You
my first thought was
come on.
Which I know it's not this guy because you said two first names. Because I was thinking of Joe Juravicious.
No, I'll give you one clue. Sesame Street.
He's not gonna get it, Chris.
Bert Emanuel.
Yeah.
Yeah.
A little too inside football
right.
for a guy.
Well, I thought maybe you would
what
have
year was that? 2000?
It was the 99 season, but in the year 2000.
All right, Donnie.
Thank you, Don.